Listen and stream the all-new Talk Radio Freedom 106.5 for the only talk that matter.
Good afternoon. Trinidad's Bagel Freedom 106.5 FM presents the Lunchtime Doctor program. I'm just holding on for Bass. He's stepping into studio momentarily. And we present to you the Lunchtime Doctor program broadcast live on Freedom 106.5 FM, Sangeet 106.1 FM, Vibe City 105 FM and Sky 99.5 FM. Dr. Safia Mohammed, unfortunately, will not be with us today, but one of her colleagues is joining us. That's Dr. Nadia Watson. So before we get into the conversation and discussions today, giving you a bio of our doctor for today's Lunchtime Doctor program, of course, so Dr. Watson is a family physician from Vistabella, graduated University of the West Indies in 2014 with a master's degree in palliative care medicine with distinctions. Over the years, she has cared for numerous patients and speaking volumes for not only her vast knowledge and experience, but also the trust placed in her by families and her patients as well. So good afternoon, Dr. Watson. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I'm fine. And you?
Great, great. So I'm just holding on for Bass. He's going to be stepping in a short while. And of course, reminding our listeners that you can give us your calls for your medical questions on our hotline numbers 627-3223, 625-2257. And you could send us your questions on WhatsApp, your text messages, 306-1065. And Dr. Watson will be addressing them. And today we're going to be speaking about palliative care and demystifying this. So as we dive into the discussions, Doctor, what exactly is this palliative care and how does it improve the patient's quality of care?
Okay, so the first thing I want to say is that dying is a natural process and it happens to everyone. No one gets away from dying. We tend to be afraid to speak about death and dying, and that's kind of where I come in. Palliative care is more about an approach to patients that have a life-limiting illness. So let's say the most common types of patients I will see will be heart failure patients and cancer patients, renal failure patients, COPD, any disease that is life-limiting. And I try to make the patients have a better quality of life. And everybody says, you know, how are you going to give somebody a better quality of life if they're dying? Well, first of all, I help with major things such as providing relief from pain and other symptoms that patients may get. So I am kind of like the background doctor while the patient going through chemo and all these things and going through the lack of appetite and the nausea, the vomiting and the pain, I come in and I try to fix that as best as possible. I also try to enhance like their emotional and spiritual well-being by allowing them to speak freely to their family. We do that in such a way so that the thought of dying becomes less of a taboo, like, you know, oh my God, let's not speak about that. I also care for the families and their caregivers, because some people always forget about the caregivers and the stresses that they may be undergoing, whether it's they're grieving already for the lost one or the difficulty of caring for someone that needs their help 24 hours a day. I also ensure that patients that are very worried, especially patients with very young family members, sort of start to prep themselves to be able to plan for their loved ones in the future, like, you know, do an advanced care plan, have their wills and all of these things in order. All right, so basically in a nutshell, that's what I do and more. So that's basically what it is, and that's how we also help with their quality of life. Because if you're not worried about something, or if you understand something very well, then you don't really feel that sense of loss of hope. All right. So that's it, kind of like in a nutshell of what I do.
Okay. So what about the difference between this care and hospice care?
All right. So people think that when a palliative doctor comes into the management of a patient, they instantly think the doctor has thrown them away, and we basically telling them that we can do nothing for them. As I just spoke to you about, is look how many things we do for you. It's not about telling you, okay, you're going to die and this and the other. This is not just end of life care. I can come into a patient's life from the time they're diagnosed with something, even if it's like stage one cancer, because from then on, you need to start planning for your future and all these other things that come along with it. A hospice is end of life care, meaning that when I deal with a patient that is at end of life, meaning no more than 6 months of life, sometimes I go like between 6 weeks and 12 weeks. That is what hospice care is and end-of-life care is. Palliation is all of the things leading up to that period, because that period from time of diagnosis could be years, it could be 5 years, it could be 4 years, it could be longer. But no matter how long as you have a potential life-limiting illness, you should be planning your future, and you should be planning the what if. What if this comes back? What if I don't get better? What if the medications don't work? So you think that is you're clear about that one, or you feel about that explanation?
That's great, yeah, very good. Of course, for our listeners, this is the Lunchtime Doctor program. We are broadcasting simulcast on Freedom 106.5 FM, Singeet 106.1 FM, Vibe CT 105 FM, and Sky 99.5 FM. If you got your medical questions, you can on WhatsApp 306-1065, and of course through our hotline numbers as well, 627-3223, 625-2257. So I know that you mentioned previously some of the major areas that this care would cover in terms of illnesses and so on. And of course, it will not discriminate in terms of age. Both persons that may be quite young and can get a diagnosis, they could still access this care, right? And if so, how can patients access this level of care?
Okay, so for me, there are two types of care you can get in Trinidad and Tobago. I'll talk about it as in Trinidad and Tobago. So we have private and we have public. So in the public setting, we have Vita's House, that's in St. James, and a really wonderful doctor runs that, and that's Dr. Astra Chang. And then we have Cora Hospital that has a beautiful palliative care unit, and that is run by Dr. Karen Cox, another very wonderful patient. In Port of Spain, another wonderful doctor. Then in Port of Spain, we have private, such as with Dr. Chelsea Garcia. So people could look up these names and contact them if needed. South and Central would be me, Dr. Watson, and also Dr. Stacey Charmley. So you have a range. In fact, it's really five doctors, if you look at it, that really have to do palliation throughout this entire country. And that's why we want to, educate people out there that we do exist. And even though we're only five people, we go beyond to try and make sure that as long as you reach out to us, that we try to provide this type of care for you and your family.
Sure. Okay. Thanks so much, Dr. Watson. So we've got to take a short break now. And when we come back, Bass is here. So he'll continue with you. This is the Lunchtime Doctor program right here on Freedom 106.5 FM, Singeet 106.1, Vibe CT 105, and Sky 99.5 FM.
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.
All right. Hello. Good afternoon. All right. Bass is here. Welcome to the Lunchtime Doctor. And today, in for Dr. Safiya Mohammed, we have Nadia Watson. Of course, later on, we will be taking your calls at 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course on WhatsApp 306-1065. We're on Freedom 106.5 FM, of course, Sangeet 106.1 FM, and Sky 99.5. And of course, February the 4th was World Cancer Day. In this vein, of course, we're talking about screening, nutrition, treatment, and of course, a topic often discussed is palliative care, which we bring to the forefront today. So once again, good afternoon and welcome, Dr. Watson, and thank you for being with us today.
My pleasure.
All right. So where did we left off? Let's continue.
We left off as in terms of where can palliative care be accessed, like mm-hmm. Where can they go if they're looking for this type of care want more information about that care.
All right, definitely. So palliative care, is it a care only for the elderly?
A lot of people have that notion, but no. I've had young patients. I mean, my youngest patient was seven.
Seven
years old. Uh-huh. Anybody could have a life-limiting illness, so you can have cancers in the very young.
Mm-hmm.
The amazing thing with little ones, like when I went to see this seven-year-old, the seven-year-old seemed to be more mature than the parents. Children have this sort of strength inside of them, and they are able to actually tell their mommies and daddies, you know, I will be okay. It's time for me to go. And, you know, so even though people think, oh my God, how do you do this? There is like a hope when you see these kinds of things going on. It's not just sad and depressing. There is a lot of good in it. So yes, I see all age groups because you can have any, so, and these days cancers, I'm seeing them in very young patients, 20, 21, cancers such as breast cancer. My youngest patient was 21 years old. All ages.
All right, of course. And since we're talking palliative care, what is the difference between that type of care and a hospice care?
All right, well, we spoke about that before, I'll just repeat it. With hospice care, that's more end of life, meaning that you have a limited time, mm-hmm. usually about 3 months left to live. Sometimes I extend it and say 6 months, but I know for sure that your time is limited here. Whereas so we deal with more end of life things. And at end of life, we have more management issues that we have to deal with, such as pain management, nausea, vomiting, constipation, unable to sleep, because a lot of patients that are dying are very agitated, and that's normal when a person is dying. Palliative care, however, I can be introduced into a patient's life from the onset of diagnosis. Doesn't matter what the life-limiting illness is. It could be cancers, it could be heart failure, it could be renal failure, it could be COPD, it could be anything. And I just make sure that these particular patients understand their illness, understand what may happen in the future, and plan ahead. And I also take care of their families and counsel them. No matter what they want to know or ask, I am very free and I'm very comfortable discussing death and dying and the possibility of this happening in the future. So that's more what palliative care is, where I work in background. I kind of, while the patient going, having you know, all this chemo and all of that, and they having severe pain and nausea, vomiting, I step in and I deal with that while they continue things like their treatments. So that's basically what palliative is.
Okay.
Taking care of the patient and giving them the best quality of life mm-hmm. and the most dignity.
All right.
And I would say dignity is like, you know, patients, families tend to think that, okay, patient's dying, you see change. So I discuss changes that they'll see as the patient gets weaker. So when it starts happening, family members won't panic and call ambulance and rush their family to a hospital, because that's not dignity. Because you don't want to be in a hospital with strangers, and if something happens to you, none of your loved ones around you. I try to encourage home care as much as possible.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can do that, I'm there to help.
All right, definitely. But how important is it for the patient themselves to accept the fact, look, you know, this is it? Because, I mean, this is bringing back some memories for me, because this February would be a year since my mom passed from a breast cancer, right?
Yeah.
And then, of course, we were taking
sorry
care.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah, okay, you're taking care of her. And, you know, but she accepted the fact, look, that she only has a few more months, I mean, you know, a few times left. And we were able to prepare, you know, for her. So how important is it for the actual person with the illness themselves to accept the fact that it wouldn't be, you know, much longer? I know your job is to make them feel comfortable, even the family to feel comfortable, but the person themselves have to have that sense of comfort. Look, I'm going to die, which is something maybe hard to accept, but it's something that we all have to accept at some point in time.
Yes, it is. I would prefer to give you an example, because mm-hmm. I example is a better thing. I think people understand things better when you put it as in real terms. So
yeah.
I had this patient, I'll give you two examples.
Mm-hmm.
I had this patient, she was in her 50s dying of breast cancer.
Right.
And she had such severe pain. We couldn't control the pain. No matter what I do, that pain wasn't going. So one day I say to myself, I say, you know what? I'm going to sit down with this lady and I'm going to have a one-on-one for as much hours as it takes to find out what else is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Only to find out that she had two children. She had two children that were in university. And she's so worried because she understood that she may have a few weeks to live.
Yeah.
She was so worried about how they were going to finish university if she was not able to pay for their tuition.
Right.
And what I did, I just contacted financial advisors and someone to come in from the bank to sit on her bedside and discuss it and get things in place.
Mm.
Once I did that, she had no pain.
Okay. Wow.
I just, yeah, and that is emotional mixed with a spiritual pain. People want to know what a spiritual pain is. Yeah. That is spiritual pain, where you're so worried about something, you feel this pain in your heart. It's like, you know, if your loved one rip your heart away and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's exactly what she was feeling. So that's an example of how we help.
Mm-hmm.
Another such example I had a very young woman who had pancreatic cancer. When I mean young, like she was 55.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a very small child. And she had nothing put in place. And we did that. We made sure that her mortgage was sorted, all her finances were sorted. We made sure that that child would be well looked after the fact. And that is how I would say it will benefit patients. Yeah, that's what my, you know, most memorable patients that we helped in such a way that when they closed their eyes, they were comfortable. They had no pain. They had no worries. All was well. They knew everything would be okay.
Okay, beautiful, beautiful. Of course, we're talking to Dr. Nadia Watson. She's in for Dr. Sophia Mohammed today. A different edition of the Lunchtime Doctor. Of course, our questions are 627-3223, 625-2257, and of course, WhatsApp at 306-1065. I'm sure we will have some listeners out there who may be caring for persons with cancer and maybe other terminally illnesses, right? And of course, who can access palliative care and how? Is it something you could get a grant for? Is it well expensive? You know, how is the access to it?
All right. So in Trinidad and Tobago, we have public and private.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say for me, I am fully private. So what we do is we do home visits, and depending on the location of the home visits, that will be, you know, in terms of how the price would be. All right, and also how much consumable somebody uses during a house visit. Most the private doctors do that because we try to make sure the patient stays at home. Now, public, there is also Beta's House, which is free and now government run, and also there's Cora. I've been to both of these institutions and they're extremely well run. Both my colleagues, Dr. Astra Chang and Dr. Karen Cox, run the Beta's and the Cora facility. So patients that really, because, you know, sometimes when you're doing chemotherapy and all these different things, you have to keep in mind that suppose this patient that we're taking care of here is the breadwinner. So when you, let's say, for some reason, the government does not have a particular type of drug and they have to access it privately, their funds will be going down and down and down. And we always have to keep in mind, okay, this is a possibility. So we try to keep even the costings fair as possible so that we can allow as much people as we can, both private and public. If they can't do the private, because we could understand that after they spend all this time, money, and loss of income because they're not well, they can always access, as I said, the Vitas and also Cora. And as I said before, I've been there and it's very well run. So don't be afraid because it's government run. It is very well run.
All right. Okay. That's some good reassurance there. Okay. Of course, in between here, we will give you an eye care tip shared by, of course, Dr. Sophia Mohammed. And of course, it is to know your family's eye health history. Talk to your family members about their eye health history. It's important to know if anyone has been diagnosed with an eye disease or condition, since many are hereditary. This information will help to determine if you're having an eye disease or condition. Of course, your eye care tip right here on the Lunchtime Doctor. Something again, Doctor, about this palliative care. Is it something, let's say, you know, somebody is alone, you have no siblings, probably no children, and you're reaching a certain age and you want to put things in place for later on, maybe, you know, you have a history of cancer or some sort of illness. Is this something you of yourself could do to put in place for yourself?
Well, we guide them. So let's say someone, there are two types of things people want to do. They either want to do an advanced care plan, or they want to do a will, or they want to do both.
Right.
So what an advanced care plan is to basically tell whichever family members they do have, or friends, or doctors, exactly what they want in the event that they can no longer speak for themselves. This advanced care plan could have anything in it. You want this type of dress being worn when it's time to be buried, if you want cremation, if you want to go into ICU, if you don't want them to put tubes down your throat. It could be anything that you would think, I don't want for myself. I don't want tubes in my throat. I don't want nobody come doing chest compressions on me if I get a heart attack, because no matter what, I have this life-limiting illness anyway. So doing that is just continuing my suffering, not really giving me quality of life. So an advanced care plan is done by, you go with your lawyer, you write it out, you write exactly your terms and conditions for every single thing, and then you have the person that is closest to you aware of where it is, because after you do this with your lawyer, you have to actually register it to the courts. Now, this can be changed anytime you want, but you have to re-register whatever your changes are. All right, so that is one part. The second part is your will. Of course, your will is your will. You write it out, you see who have to get what and whatever else happening, even if it's a friend. Some people donate, that have no family, donate things to charity, to orphanages. They donate things to their church, their temple, their mosque. So yeah, that is what we try to put in place. We let them know that this is something they can do, and this is how you're going to do it.
All right, okay. So we see the phone lines are ringing. Are you willing to, of course, take some calls, even if it's not on this palliative care?
Yeah,
some
sure,
general calls. All right, so 627-3223 and 625-2257, and of course 306-1065. We have Dr. Nadia Watson in the hot seat today, the Lunchtime Doctor. She's in for Dr. Sophia Mohammed. Of course, we'll be in Heard on Freedom 106.5, Sangeet 106.1 FM, and Sky 99.5. Let's go with our very first question. Good day, Doctor. Is there a test to detect if there is a clot of blood throughout someone's body? Could one do a random test without requesting a position, a test to detect if there's a blood clot?
Yes, there are tests. Okay, so let's start off. If you have a blood clot, let's say if you have a blood clot into your leg, in your calves, etc. So let's say, usually a patient will come to me with pain and swelling in the leg and redness. My first instinct will be, okay, let's check. And we do something called a Doppler. A Doppler is you use an ultrasound machine to go against the vessels to see if they locate a blockage. And that's how we know there is a clot. There's also a test called a D-dimer. Now, that is not very specific. The better thing would be, depending on where they think the clot is. So let's say you have shortness of breath. Your SpO2, which is, you know, your oxygen concentration, the oxygen levels are dropping. You can also do things like CT scans of the chest, CT scan of the brain, depending if you're having severe headaches or you're having slurred speech. So there are tests that can be done, but just to say, well, just walk into a place and say, hey, let me just do a random check to see if I have a clot. Well, we don't really do that. We don't really do that, to be quite honest.
Yeah.
We do it if it is that you have high risk and something happens to you. Let's say you have a cancer. Certain cancers predispose you to clots. And so if you're coming with shortness of breath or you're coming with a swollen leg, the first thing I'm going to do is send you urgently to get the Doppler, because we can fix that. Anything that we can fix, we do, even if it's palliative.
All right. Okay, thank you. Another question here. My sister is 83 years old. About 2 months ago, she lifted a barrel and she noticed a bulging from her vagina. She thinks it is her womb, but it is very painful. She visited the gynecologist and he said nothing is wrong with the womb. It has not collapsed. But could you please shed some light on the situation? She is very worried and in pain.
Okay, so the bulge could be either at the side of the leg, like in the groin area. If that's where the bulge is, then it's something called inguinal hernia. And you need to know that for sure, because that type of hernia is a serious type of hernia, because the space that a hernia is a small opening in any of your muscles that allows the protrusion of your intestine to push out. So in the inguinal region, which is by your groin, that's the space right between the leg by where the vagina is, that groin area, the hole that the intestine protruding in is protruding through is very, very small. And if for any reason the gut gets stuck in there, it becomes a medical emergency, because you have to operate on it one time, because you can get sepsis, you can get really sick and you can die. If it's in the vagina itself, it could be that the uterus has, yes, it's like a dropped womb. The uterus has fallen down and you're seeing the cervix coming out through the vagina. Now, if she went to the gynecologist, they would have seen that, because they would have examined it, and you would just, as they open the leg and you look into the vagina, you would see how very low the cervix is, and then you would know that this womb is protruding out of the vagina, and that is fixed with either putting a ring called a pessary ring, which sometimes does not work for patients, or of course either removing the womb or putting it back up into place. But a lot of times when a womb drops to that level, the patient is usually much older, usually menopausal, and we suggest they remove the womb. So I hope that helps.
Okay, definitely. All right, so once again, folks, 627-3223, 625-2257. We're here with the lunchtime doctor. Dr. Nadia Watson is in for Dr. Sophia Mohammed. Now, I know early on we were talking about cancer, and especially with the younger children, a lot of children being born with cancer. Does the diet of a parent, or diet of the mother, especially while the child is in the womb, has anything to do with not only cancer, but maybe other illnesses that children may experience?
In these days, we've seen a lot of cancers, especially ones that long time we still barely see. So like things like pancreatic and gallbladder, etc.
Yeah.
But in little ones, you tend to get things like leukemias, mm-hmm. brain tumors. Those are the kinds of things that you mostly see with the little ones. Diet, maybe, because why is it all of a sudden we're seeing this huge increase in cancers? It's possible maybe the hormones that they do place in products, but I'm not an expert in that area. So I would say I've had extremely healthy patients that eat only organic and eat the best and exercise, get a terminal illness. So whether it's diet or non-related to diet, it can, like, I even have very fit patients that go to the gym, and while running on the treadmill, they'd get a massive heart attack, and they eat the best and the healthiest types of food. So it's a possibility, yes. But as I said, I can't really say yes or no. I will just say always try to be as healthy as possible. You don't have to be extreme, mm-hmm. but I always say to avoid other things like diabetes, hypertension, or heart disease. Just eat as healthy as you can, and you can cheat sometimes, no problem with that. But exercise and diet is something that I realize a lot of people don't really do in Trinidad and Tobago so much.
That is so sad.
I've been trying to push it,
yeah,
because it really does help. It helps with your mental well-being, it helps with your confidence, mm-hmm. it helps with prevention of comorbidities like diabetes, hypertension, heart disease,
yeah.
renal failure, all these things.
Diet and exercise, very important. Let's take a call here. Hello, good afternoon.
Hi, good afternoon. Dr. Watson.
This might Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. This might be a bit of a tricky one here. But if you are aware that an elderly person is being abused, I listened to your whatever you had to say, everything you said just now, and there is spiritual pain, emotional pain, and this person is totally ignored all the issues. She has a lot of medical conditions. She's elderly. She's now 91. But the problem is the carer would not let anyone get near her. She's like a bodyguard. She doesn't want my mother to be aware of anything. She wants total control. Now, I would say from listening to you, this lady certainly needs palliative care. She is really weak. She had COVID. She got over that. Her body, her heart now is on a 30% capacity. She's got high blood pressure. She is stressed. She is worried. She is distressed. But no one can get near her. How do we get past that barrier?
Okay, so I'll try to answer that one as much as I can. Because I'm not another lawyer and all of that, but I'll try because I have had cases like this. So it depends on who's taking care of this person. If this person taking care of this person is the daughter or the husband or somebody that is like the next of kin.
The daughter who appointed herself as next of kin.
Is it the daughter?
Yes.
All right. So if it's the daughter, then that can be very difficult because if she is the next of kin and she is the person that is the sole caretaker of this particular patient, then unless the patient is able to make her own decisions, like say, listen, I want to see so-so-so and so-so-so, then the caretaker, the person that is really the primary caregiver, which is the daughter, will have that right to be able to say, no, I don't want you coming, I don't want this one coming. If it is that this is not something that was written down by this patient or expressed by this particular patient, and if she's able to even make those types of decisions anymore, or, you know, like say, listen, I want to see my friend, I want to see this person. So that's a kind of, I would say, go see a lawyer and get some more information as to how you can go about this. But I feel that they may say the same thing, that because this is probably her sole caregiver and she's also the daughter, that she will have probably the rights of the mother.
Mm. You see, Dr. Watson, the sad thing is this lady hasn't got a voice. She hasn't got opinion. The daughter speaks for her. She is under control, if I should put it this way. She can speak, she can voice, she can say what she wants, but she is frightened. She's insane. That's another distress for her as well. She is absolutely under control.
Is there any other family member that's close to her? Does she have other children or living spouse?
But she wouldn't let anyone get near her.
Including the other children?
Sorry?
Including the other children? Does she have other children?
Yes. No one can get near her because just in case the mother says exactly how she feels, she's not allowed to voice her opinion, not allowed to say anything.
Yeah, well, that can be reported to the police, ma'am. That is really...
I think going to a lawyer and let the lawyer tell them, I would say, if they should go to the police, if this is something that... But the lawyer will be able to tell you if it makes sense or no sense. Mm-hmm. As I said, if this is the primary caregiver, then as a primary caregiver, she will usually be the one that can make the decisions if the mother cannot speak for herself. Mm-hmm. And if it has not been written down by the mother, meaning the mother never did an advanced care plan, which tells people what she wants in her life that is documented in the courts, you know, registered in the courts, then you'll have to start with a lawyer. And the lawyer will kind of guide you as to what you can do. I hope that helps.
All right. Thank you very much, ma'am. We need to take some other calls here. Hello, good afternoon. Welcome to the lunchtime, doctor. Hello?
Good afternoon.
Yes?
What can I use for when I have no appetite? Appetite gone completely.
appetite is gone completely. Okay, listen off the air, please. Right. Yeah. No appetite.
Okay, can I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead, yes.
All right, okay. So if a patient is really ill, they have to do basic things. You have to start with basic mouth care. So a lot of patients that are really ill and taking medications, especially if they're taking any form of pain medications or any medications at all, one of the side effects is dry mouth. So always watch the basics first. If you find the patient's lip is very dry, and when you open the mouth, the patient has no saliva in it, then we have to create a good mouth environment. So you need to get a chapstick or some Vaseline for the lips. And that's like your best friend. Anytime you pass next to that person, you have to apply the chapstick or the Vaseline on the lips of that patient. You then have to get some glycerin. That is not Listerine, it's glycerin. And you get like gauze, pour the glycerin on it and clean out the mouth of that patient. That keeps the mouth a little bit more moist so that if you put food in it, even if it's a little bit of food, the patient can actually chew it and swallow it. A lot of patients don't want to see the food, not only because, yes, some of them is because of the fact the cancer or the illness made them lose their appetite, but a lot of times it can be as simple as very dry mouth. The other thing is let them suck on some ice chips. So you chop up some ice chips, you give it them to suck on it. I had a patient, I went to his home, he couldn't even speak. I just cleaned his mouth with glycerin, put ice chips, put Vaseline on the lips, and voila. The man was talking nonstop. So check with basics like that first. If this person barely has an appetite, do not fill this person's stomach with anything that has no calories or no protein, because that is the main thing. The main object of this is to make sure that their calories and protein levels are optimized. So let's say you're going to give them, a lot of people say, oh, she had some tea. Tea have nothing in it. So instead of giving them tea, you can just give them like an Ensure or full cream milk mix. So even if you put the tea bag in, no water, just hot milk. So those are the little tricks that I would do with patients that have limited appetite. So that at least if they're having anything, if you're putting anything to their mouth, think to yourself, does this have protein? Does this have calories? And if the answer is no, then you have to go and look for something with calories and protein.
All right, thank you there very much. Once again, you listen to the Lunchtime Doctor. Of course, Dr. Nadia Watson is in for Dr. Sophia Muhammad today. We're on Freedom 106.5, Sangeet 106.1 FM, and of course, Sky 99.5. Our numbers 627-3223, 625-2257, and 306-1065 for your WhatsApp questions only. Of course, early on, we're talking about the palliative care, and of course, that very concerned caller there, that maybe a lot of people are going through that with abuse in these homes. No?
Yes, that is a tricky one. I would say, you know, go and see, seek lawyer advice for those things. And if the lawyer says go report it, then go forward and report.
Yeah, but to me, a red flag with any homes or anybody taking care of your loved ones, if you cannot go to see them, you know, I mean, of course, it may have visiting times, but if you cannot go to see them or get close to them. Well, that one is a mother-daughter type of thing, but I'm talking about homes in general. If you cannot go to see them, you just can't show up where you want to meet, that is a red flag.
Because anytime a home tells you that the visiting hours is only between 3 and 4,
exactly.
Don't leave nobody there.
That's right.
Visiting hours must be any time I feel to visit.
Exactly.
Because I need to peek and see that at any time of day I walk inside of there, my love one has been taken care of.
Very good.
So that's my top tip today.
Yes, very good advice. Very good. Let's get with another tip. Of course, a tip of the heart, a heart care tip. Let's give our diet some love to prevent a heart attack or stroke. Too much saturated fats and cholesterol can cause plaque deposits to form the heart arteries, resulting in a heart attack, or plaque deposits in arteries of the brain and resulting in a stroke. Let's reduce the intake of saturated fats and cholesterol by reducing the amounts of processed and fried foods we indulge. And again, you just mentioned in Trinidad and Tobago that exercising and eating properly is something that we just don't seem to do. We see our people, you know, nothing wrong with having some certain fast foods and, you know, the D's and the chicken and chips and that thing once in a while. But some people consume these things every single day and don't realize it's not good for them. What can we do, doctor, to get people to take care of themselves more? What can we do in this
country? It's really education. Mm. Like, let's say, for instance, sugars. So diabetics will come to me and say they'll understand how their sugar is not controlled because they don't eat any sweet things, no cupcake, no fudge, no ice cream, nothing like that. But yet, in their plate, they have a pound of rice and half of the plate is macaroni. And they cook five starches. So you have macaroni pie, you have fried rice.
Potato salad.
Potato salad.
Oh, gosh.
Right.
Yeah.
So the main thing is not so much not getting things that you enjoy, but, you know, percentage of things on your plate.
Yeah, moderation.
25% of your plate should be one starch. So choose if it's the macaroni pie, the potato, or the rice. And the next 25% will be a protein. And the rest of that plate, 50%, is vegetables and salad. And that's how we have to start eating. And the other thing we need to start doing is looking at the carbohydrates and changing it to more complex carbohydrates by adding the whole wheat, the seeds, the flax seeds, the chia seeds, making it all grainy, because you want to make it more fibrous, because like provisions as well, they are fibrous. But that, even if you're eating that, you still have to only eat 25% of that on your plate. So portions is important, and get up and move, whether it is that you dance to a calypso song or soca, or you do a 20 minutes doing something, anything.
Tell them.
Get up and move.
All right. Yeah, let's take some calls. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
Tell that doctor to shake that doctor hand. I wish my wife was wrong to hear what this doctor is saying. Just yesterday, I telling her that.
Record it and play it for your wife.
Oh, yeah, on a Sunday, you want this macaroni pie, potato salad, plus potato and pie, and whatnot. I say, that's too much carbs. I say, you need more green food, 75% of the green food on your plate. Yesterday, I telling her that. Yes, I tell her that. And I hear the exact same data there too.
Well, yes, well, tell her, keep telling her again. Keep telling her.
I tell her
again.
That more green food, that's what you need.
Yeah, well, you know.
Yes, very good.
All right, yeah. Man. But and there are a lot of people in the homes, doctor, who have this problem. People just cook what they want, how they want. Like, you may want to cut down on salt, cut down on meat, eat a little healthier lifestyle. But then you have other people in your home cooking, you know, all the meat, all the salt, everything, and things that are so bad for you. You know, it's sometimes it's a battle in the home too.
You have to have a rule.
Mm-hmm.
Every man jack eating what I cook. Like my mother used to say, if you ever want it, that's the business.
Well, kill
it. Either eat what.
Yeah.
Eat what
imagine you have some children right now in homes. The parents would cook a good meal, and the child saying they don't want that, they go in and order some kind of fast food something.
Yes.
That is
those
ridiculous.
Yeah. And you're seeing a lot of childhood obesity as well in Trinidad and Tobago. For a little country like us, we shouldn't have so much high blood pressure and diabetes.
Boy.
We live on a Caribbean island, plenty sun, sand, go and swim, go and run, go and enjoy the outdoors, go and explore your country and exercise.
Wow, boy, doctor, boy. But we need to hear this, Dr. Moyes. Hello, good afternoon. Hello?
Morning.
Yes, good afternoon.
Morning, Dara.
Yeah.
To the doctor there.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
hi. A little example with you, right? My mom, she passed away a few years ago. But she lived to be almost close to 80 years old, right? And she had one of them old timers where they grew up and not eat everything, but, you know, what we've seen that, as you all are talking about, the children and them eating today, long ago, it didn't have anything, you know. Long ago was a different kind of menu. But today we see in Trinidad, they have all those fast food chains, right, where we didn't have long ago. So now there's a different lifestyle and changes in the diet, even though that sometimes, you know, you go fall victim of the fast food out there, right? So what I want to ask the doctor is that when they say eat healthy and you call all those things they just know, right, and you go in the grocery store, and simple thing like peanut butter and thing, right? Which sometimes you like, you want to make a little punch. And they're showing you how much fat they have in it, right?
Yeah.
So how do you access these labels and them when you go there and you're seeing hydrogenated oil and all these? A lot of people don't know these things that you read the labels, and maybe from there they can follow up to see that which is healthy and which is not healthy. Thank you very much.
To answer that one is, yes, you could read labels and things like that, but okay, let's start with, we can't really blame a lot of family members for certain things. Like, say you want to eat fast food. A lot of times the household has a mother and father and both working long hours. So sometimes we can fall into the habit of buying something quick for the family. But even if you're buying something quick, or if you're going in the grocery to pick up something, try your best to move into a more healthy version. So let's say you go to buy fast food. Sometimes they have salads on it, and they can have the fried chicken with the salad, and you can use your little salad dressings, etc. If it is that you're at home in the night, you can start a pre-prep. So my husband, my daughter wrapped, she have him in control. So in the night, he will do up a whole set of salad and prep it, because she is very health conscious. Nice. So you're prepping the night. So in the daytime now, when everybody's scrambling, everything already prepped. You have your seasoned things in the fridge, you have your salad in a bowl, and try to get the things that are not ridiculously expensive. So if romaine lettuce is $1 million, look for local lettuce.
Nice. You're watching people carrots, watching their pocket too.
Things that, so whatever is in abundance, so a cucumber in abundance, tomato in abundance, because sometimes even the cucumber and tomato could be very expensive. Mm-hmm. You just ship away from that and you get the ones that are affordable at that time. There's always one or two vegetables and salad things that are more affordable than the others until, you know, that time comes when that is in abundance.
Right,
so I hope that helps.
Yes, man. Good advice on me, doctor. Watch what you eat. I mean, doctor, even on the afternoon, I keep talking about this constantly. There's a school that I pass by, and there's a snow cone vendor out there, and I see children and parents buying this snow cone. And not just the snow cone, you know, putting condensed milk on top of this snow cone. And I'm watching them eating this thing almost every single day. And I'm saying, wow, boy, these people are eating themselves towards diabetes.
Yes, and nothing wrong with having a snow cone, you know.
Once in a while.
Let's say you have once in a while. Say, watch. Listen, when you get 10 out of 10 in your spelling, you get a snow cone.
As a treat, you know.
It's a treat. It's something you have to work for.
A reward.
Yes. So, ice cream. You did really well this term.
Yeah.
Let me go and get a little fast food and a little ice cream. Nothing wrong with that. But let that be just a treat, if possible. And as I said, as tired as you might be in the night when you get home from work, try to pre-prep certain things to make it easier for yourself and your children.
So
if you do this, then it becomes a habit.
With
doing something over and over and over, it just becomes a habit. And then when your child gets turned, be an adult, they too will pass on this habit, because that's how they accustomed eating.
Children live what they learn, you know. Let's take one more call. We have about 2 minutes before 1 o'clock. Hello, good afternoon.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you have a vehicle?
I'm a what?
Yeah, and you have a vehicle?
A vehicle, yeah.
Oh, and you have a vehicle, but every 90 days you change the oil?
If I change my oil, I change my oil for about as much as
I can. That is iron. A vehicle is iron.
Mm-hmm.
What about two man who just put in all kind of food and they don't detox themselves?
Yeah, exactly.
That's one added main thing.
Mm-hmm.
Long time, every 6 months, you must take a clean out.
Every purge. Take a purge.
They're taking a clean out.
Yeah.
So that is one of our main thing too. People get put it in and not flushing out the system.
If
you change the oil, and you will need that engine in the same.
Of course, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's it. That is the same day too.
Yeah, change your oil, flush your injectors too. If some people treat their bodies as well as they treat their vehicles, right? They'll be better off. Some people treat the vehicles better than they treat their own bodies.
It's very true.
You know?
Yeah.
Well, doctor, it's been an absolute pleasure. I mean, thank you for filling in for Dr. Sophia Mohammed on such a short notice.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
All right. Okay. Thank you very much. All right. You've been listening, folks, to the Lunchtime Doctor. Of course, Dr. Nadia Watson. Filling in for Dr. Sophia Mohammed today and driving in that care. And of course, we also spoke about palliative care. Of course, you've been listening to it on Freedom 106.5, Sangit 106.1 FM, and of course, Sky 99.5 FM. Good afternoon to our sister stations out there, right?
Talk is streaming at freedom106.5.com.